I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Ruthless Aggression is back. As we record this on Saturday, August 7th, we are officially 2 weeks away from SummerSlam in beautiful yet extremely hot Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm Pierce, joined by Rob and Chris. I just have one question. Did you guys book on Spirit Airlines or no?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Okay. You know, I mean, it's okay if, you know, you're not taking a really long flight, whatever. Other than that, it's a poverty airline. And it's been shown over the last couple of weeks, really, like, it's been crazy the delays and cancellations that they've had just continuously over the past 7-8 days. So keep in mind, if you did decide to be a broke bitch, which again is okay, understandable. We get it. Please do check and make sure, or just try to see if you can get a refund and book something else, because who knows if you want to get here on time or in a timely fashion. There's been a lot of headaches from what I know, but we're 2 weeks away from SummerSlam. It's going to be a big event. We got a couple more weeks to talk about it though. For now, let's stick to what's going on right now, and then we got 2 weeks of wrestling to talk about, because last week we're like, we can definitely put this off. But let's stick with some of the big news of the week, and it's really been continuous this entire year, is the amount of releases that WWE's made. You know, we're used to some of these waves coming, because as we see in back in the day in 05, in the era, you know, we used to get these waves of cuts maybe 3 or 4 times a year. And they'd kind of be wrestlers that you'd understand. You know, they're not getting much screen time, or if they are, they're kind of wasting it. You know, this year it's come so continuous, and there's been some major names that, you know, the Federation has had to let go for one reason or another. So we'll go down the line, because I do want to talk about last night, but the bigger name over the last week and a half that was let go was Bray Wyatt. And that came as a shock to me, because I found out on Facebook. It's like one of those weird times where I'm like, all right, notification bar is filling up. Let me go on Facebook. And I'm scrolling, and there's like, I had to check and see if it was a fake page, because it literally said 2 minutes before I saw it that it was posted. And that was a shock to me, simply because of how valuable of a character actor that Bray is, what he brings to the entertainment side of World Wrestling Entertainment. He's a big name, he sells a lot of merch. Creatively, it's a massive loss. I feel like of all of the cuts that they have made so far this year, Bray was the most shocking.
Yeah, I mean, it's real surprising. You know, obviously he is a guy that was polarizing with the crowd, but, you know, it's like he moved merchandise, and it, you know, the people that liked him obviously really liked him.
I disagree that he was polarizing with the crowd. He was polarizing on the internet.
That's fair.
The crowd never negatively reacted to him at all whatsoever.
That's fair.
The crowd put them in such a bad position that they killed Seth's babyface potential for his entire career.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, that's
very true. Seriously, like, the only times I ever really saw critiques of Bray were on the internet.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Yeah, no, it was kind of out of nowhere. You know, the thing that had kind of been going around was, you know, he wasn't doing well still from, you know, Brody passing. But then, you know, he got cleared to compete, and it just kind of felt like, oh, you know, it's one of those things where I saw he's making too much money and not competing enough, and that's just been a thing they've been doing all year, and it kind of sucks.
So you mentioned that, and, like, I saw a good point on the internet today that, you know, people are blaming Vince, and obviously, you know, when something on the internet or something happens and the internet has to blame Vince McMahon within the Federation, everything's Vince McMahon's fault because he's the creator, he's the tinkerer, if you will. And somebody had put forth the point that, you know, this probably isn't Vince McMahon's, this is probably more Nick Khan. How much of this, all of the cuts that we're seeing, some of the big names that are being let go, is more Nick Khan saying, hey, we got to clear house for whatever's coming, you know, if XYZ, you know, I feel like he's determining their value more so than Vince's.
I agree at this point because corporations bring in people to shed payroll and fire people all the time. And it feels like that's part of what he was brought in to do. And sometimes that's the way it goes.
Forgive me if I'm wrong, but he was brought in last August, right? August 2020?
I believe so, yes.
So he's a post-pandemic hire.
Yes, he was he was definitely a post-pandemic hire. So, yeah, this happens with corporations all the time. It doesn't make it right. I'm not justifying it or anything. I'm just, you know, laying it out here. Like,
trying to reason with all of what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's what happens with corporations sometimes. I think that Laurinaitis was probably brought back in to be the fall guy because I continue to see he's the one who did the texting or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes people bring in people to be the fall guys and take the heat. I'm sure Laurinaitis at this point in his career doesn't give a shit about any of that. So of course he's going to willingly take the heat for all that stuff. It just kind of sucks. It's deflating. I don't know. I honestly give a lot of credit to people, I guess, on Twitter who continue to talk about this because I'm spent. There's nothing else that I can really say about anything that keeps happening because it just happens.
Well, yeah, because, like, there's the thing. Like, oh, they're doing releases almost monthly now, and it's like, oh, this sucks. I'm sorry. Like, I hope all these people land on their feet, obviously. Yeah. But then it's like, oh, the roster's so big. You know, they needed to do this eventually, but this probably isn't the right way to go about it. And it's just – it's the same, like –
there's a plethora of catch-22s in
those. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why it's just not worth talking about, like, at least on Twitter. Like, on here, it's fine because, you know – or kind of, you can kind of contain what you say on here a little bit more, and it's not, you know, one click away from just freaking blowing up.
And
also,
I feel like there's a healthy expectation that these guys and gals will land on their feet somewhere else, and they'll be good. You know, like, the internet does this thing where they go to extremes. There's no nuance or levelness to it. You know, we can speculate as to why these things are happening, try to figure out the who, what, where, when, why, but then also be respectful to the performers and understand that the performers are going to be good no matter what at this point, because, you know, not saying we're finally out of panic, which we're definitely not out of this pandemic. Good God, we're not. But we're getting back to a little bit of normalcy where, you know, the indies are going to be popping very, very soon if they're not, you know, in specific towns already. We just saw PSG. Was that their first show?
Yes.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was crazy in LA a couple nights ago. PSG just had their first show. So you're starting to see, you know, the independent scene pop back up. These guys are going to be fine there. AEW is booming right now. About to get their second show on TV. They've got four shows overall, and they're going to keep expanding. Impact. And it's funny because my brother watches Impact. My brother actually watches more NXT than I do right now, which is weird because he was so anti-NXT. But, you know, he watches Impact, and there is, like, a contingency of wrestling fans that, like, still pop into, you know, Impact every week or MLW or what have you. Like, you know, I feel like we understand that some of these players, especially in the case of Bray, because, you know, immediately when Bray got let go, you know, it wasn't just he can go to AEW, he can go here, he can go there. It was, yo, he can go to Hollywood. And he could be perfectly fine in Hollywood because he's so damn creative that he can take those skills, translate it to a different medium, like The Rock did, like Cena did, and I kind of want to touch on those two in just a bit. But, you know, that's how good he is. You know, some of these folks, when we talk about NXT, like, they're going to be fine. Internet automatically wants to just throw blame and try to shame someone and not believing that their favorite didn't get a shot. I mean, it's doggy dog world, bro. Like, if you're in the major league, some players don't really stay in the major league so long. They got to go down to the minor leagues, kind of tough it out and get their way back. Some don't make it. It is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's like, I don't know, obviously it's not the same in terms of like money and stuff, but independent wrestling, I think, has kind of been down the past couple of years just because there hasn't been a ton of talent out there between WWE and AEW kind of taking all the like big players. So, you know, maybe some of these people can make a run on that scene again. Like, you know, it's not a good situation and I feel bad for all of them, obviously, but, you know, I hope they can find a way to make the best of it. Like, that's really it.
The best that you can do is have hope for a lot of these folks. It's really, it really is. The crappy thing about last night was that it happened during SmackDown, because I was floored that you would be like hearing announcements of cuts during SmackDown. I don't have the list up right now. I'm just racking off what I know in my head. Mercedes Martinez got let go. We hadn't seen her since the matches she would have with Xia Li.
Yeah,
she knew that with a concussion on a really nasty kick. I think that was by what's my girl? Dakota, right?
Yeah,
she got let go on the Dakota kick, so that's kind of a bummer. And he's very happy because she was, you know, tremendous in the time that she was there. Bobby Fish got let go, which, by the way, like, maybe I've just missed it, but Bobby Fish is a QAnon-er.
Allegedly.
Yeah, because I've seen him,
he like would share like Drake Steve's kind of like Nia is, where they would share like the stuff, and you don't know
like
if they're
his, like his post on Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a, oh God, that man's running for fucking state congressional seat. Like,
yeah, it's not ideal.
Please, for the love of God, Florida. Like, I don't trust you in the slightest, but please do not elect this motherfucker. A lot of people in NXT, I'm just blanking on some of them. Tyler Rust, who was just in the Diamond Mine. So maybe they try to pivot to somebody else in NXT that can fit there. I don't know. I'm blanking on a lot of people because I don't have the official list up right now. But
it was, I know Jake Atlas.
Jake Atlas got cut. Yeah, that was sucky. Who's my man's black kid with the cool name?
Leon Ruff.
Leon Ruff. No. Leon Ruff did get cut, but I'm thinking of somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
Blanking on his name. Damn it. And then Alex Zane. Which was a shock because Alex Zane, I think, just got signed a couple of months ago, and he's really good. But like, that's a dude who can go do Impact or AEW and be fine. So, shocking all around. But you know, it kind of is what it is at this point with what's going on. We know they're going to end up fine, pretty much. Another big story this week is Adam Cole's contract. Adam Cole's contract expired last month. We extended it through SummerSlam. They're doing TakeOver the night after. He's going to be involved in that, and then they're going to figure everything out from there. I did not read the Fightful report earlier today, so I do not know the latest on the meeting yesterday that he had with Vince.
It seemed like it went well. So, yeah.
Went well in both of their favor.
Yeah. And I mean, I think like the thing that AEW, I guess not having an offer out to him yet isn't that surprising because that was technically be tampering, but it doesn't seem like, because, you know, here's the thing about Adam Cole going to AEW. Obviously, he's very good, but like with Punk and Brian coming in, where do you fit him? And then you're trying to keep Andrade up still. You're trying to keep Christian up still. And then not even to mention all the people that, you know, you started with. So,
well, I guess, you know, not from an AEW standpoint, because if you're AEW, you don't give a fuck. If Adam Cole's on the market, you get Adam Cole.
Oh, yeah.
It's more so for like Adam Cole. Like if I was going to AEW, versus me heading straight to Raw or SmackDown next.
Yeah.
Would that be more beneficial? Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't think so. I mean, I think he'll end up staying.
Yeah, I can't see a situation where it's not like, not to be in those bad faith ass arguments about how people are treated or what they've earned or deserved or whatever, but like, if you look at the progression of Adam Cole since he got there, it's very clear that they have always had big plans for him. They've always held him in high regard. And the two times that he made main roster, or two or three times that he made main roster television, he beat Daniel Bryan and wrestled with Seth Rollins and didn't lose cleanly. Like, that's pretty indicative of, you know, someone that they have, someone that they feel can one day be a big star for that. Right. So I feel like even though they obviously had the miscommunication with the contract the past few months, that they're going to probably try and do everything to keep him. And I imagine that they probably will. I couldn't see all of this happened over the past couple of weeks or months or whatever either, but like them letting Adam Cole out of their grasp seems like something that's probably not going to happen. I think what could be interesting, I guess, though, is, you know, Adam Cole loves his Twitch streaming. Obviously, they obviously put against a rule like that, so, you know, I don't know if that's a hang up or what have you, or a possible thing that they could look into, but like, you know, it's obviously just a throwaway thing, like, oh yeah, that's right, he does that, and, you know, hopefully they'll, you know, do what they gotta do with that, so that's not a possible hang up. But yeah, I think Cole is definitely gonna be staying though.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they'll wind up understanding that this is probably best for them money wise. You know, character-wise, moving forward, stick around with WWE. He doesn't need AEW. AEW needs Adam Cole. It's kind of how I see it. So, John Cena obviously coming back to face Roman Reigns at SummerSlam. He's been doing a press tour for the Suicide Squad, and I thought he was one of the scene stealers in the Suicide Squad.
Oh yeah, no, he was very good. Like. He was fine in Fast and Furious, but he was very good in Suicide Squad.
Okay. I still have to see Fast 9, but, you know, that the Suicide Squad is a perfect movie for him to kind of, you know, be goofy as shit. And then the turn at the end, and obviously he's getting his own Peacemaker show on HBO.
Yeah, that's going to be good.
Yeah. So, not going to lie, because, you know, we end up having to be the Marvel headquarters over here. But don't look now. DC's on the run. DC's been hitting some bangs when it comes to Shazam, Birds of Prey, the supercut of Justice League, the Zack Snyder cut, and then this. They on a little bit of a run right now.
Yeah.
But John Cena was doing some promotional stuff, and he's talking to USA Today. He raised some eyebrows. He said, quote, "Man, I wish there was some sort of fountain of youth where I could be a full-time contributor. The longer they continue to bet on an aging prospect, that makes WWE's future a little bit less stable." And I feel like Cena's completely on point. And this is a dude who has honestly always gotten it, but now he's at the point where, like, yo, I can't be doing this shit full time anymore. It's time for the business to progress. As long as I keep coming back, the business isn't going to progress.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a point people have been making for a long time, though, right? Like, oh, they don't have any new stars or whatever. They rely on these older guys. And, you know, I get it. Like, the two title matches at SummerSlam are, you know, John Cena and Bill Goldberg. And, you know, Edge has a featured role. Mm-hmm. You know, but at the same time,
you can,
like,
pull it off well.
Yeah, like, for a show like SummerSlam or a show like WrestleMania, I don't think it's a problem to bring people in like that. But I do see what he's saying. Like, yeah, obviously, you know, you should prop up your own guys where, like, a main event of a show coming up should be, like, Big E against Roman Reigns. It probably will be. So it's like, you know, I get what he's saying, but also, like, I think there's always going to be a market for people who used to wrestle to come back. Because even like, you know, you look at the pops at, like, Carlito and MVP and, you know, Victoria, the reactions they got just coming back. So, reactions online.
But I would also say, like, none of those dudes are top guys. Like,
no, I agree.
I think, like, when I read what Cena's saying here, it's not really an attack on, I mean, obviously there's some veiled truth to it when it comes to the individual performance, yes. But it's also, you know, on WWE to make these guys, to help make these women. And they've done so in some forms. But, you know, Cena, I feel like, has gotten it. when it comes to, you know, hey, he's 44 years old.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to get to a point where bringing John Cena back and doing everything like Roman said a couple weeks ago, it's missionary. You know, it's going to get tired and boring and old. And it's not right now because we love Cena, and Cena's still in a space where he can do this. And he's always going to be beloved. But if we keep having to go back to his well after he's tapped out so much for the Federation, for the fans, then, you know, we're going to miss out on a future if we can't build that future. So that's kind of how I interpret what he's saying. He's right. Like, not saying that they haven't, but we don't want Cena to get to a point of Ric Flair.
No.
That's all I'm saying. Is what I feel like he's saying.
Yeah, no, exactly. Or like, you don't want to, like, not want to see him. Like, you know, because those guys you don't want to see come back anymore, just because I think even without all the other stuff about them, I don't know that they'd do anything anyway at this point, because they're, you know, 75 or whatever. You know, what can they possibly bring to the table? Like, you know, I think Stone Cold and The Rock kind of have it right. Know when to show up at this point. Mm-hmm. Follow that model. You'll be pretty good. Yeah, no, there's definitely some merits to it, though. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do, because, you know, you think Cena probably will end up being kind of a bigger star, where he's not going to be able or maybe willing to come back as much as... You know, he's working house shows now. He's
doing
he's
the garden show in September. So, I mean,
so this is probably the last, like, real run you're going to get from him.
Yeah. Yeah. Man's taking over Hollywood. Man's going to be on TV. He's almost out of here. But hey, enjoy this Cena run. They've been telling you this is the last dance. They've been telling you this is the last dance with John Cena. The promos they've been doing about the, you know, what house shows he's been at. And who did he face in Milwaukee?
It was him and Ray and Dominic against Bloodline.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and I mean, they kind of like kept Ray and Dominic from Cena for like most of the match, and then he just did all his shit the last minute.
Yeah. For the record, he got the loudest pop of the night, and it was not even close.
Of course. It's so crazy. Like, I'm wondering the amount of boos that he's going to get in Allegiant Stadium, because I feel like We'll still do John Cena sucks, because it's a thing now. But yeah, I feel like we can move past the like really believing he sucks things,
which is great. It's gonna be interesting to see what his reaction is in New York. I would have liked to have seen him come out in Rosemont this past Monday.
Yeah,
but understandable.
Just for kicks,
you know, he had the premiere, and it was cool to see him and Miro there, even though Cena had it on his full Peacemaker thing, which is goofy.
Yeah, why is he wearing the full costume every time he does media for
himself? He said he's gonna do it. So, like, yo, he's goofy, I guess. But yeah, great move from him. And then Rock finished number one at the box office this past week with Jungle Cruise. So Rock's number one right now. Cena will more likely be number one next week, or will he come out of this weekend?
Yeah, Jungle Cruise actually looks pretty good.
Is on Disney. Oh, I gotta pay for it. So fuck.
Yeah, that. $30, which I'm not gonna. It'll be free on Disney Plus in like 6 months. Right. So.
I will watch it over Christmas. Okay. Yeah. No. Cena's actually got another movie coming out later on this week with Yvonne Origi and Lil Rel, and looks very stupid. And I'm very excited for it, because I'm officially at the point where John Cena can do whatever. I'm still gonna see it. It doesn't matter how terrible it is.
Yeah.
Let's go back in time to the year 2005. What did happen? Great American Bash was terrible.
It was very bad.
Fucking bad. I forgot what happened on Raw last time, but I just keep thinking about what happens on Raw in the second Raw we're about to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Raw would happen. They were in Philly. I believe Cena faced Carlito in the main event, right?
Yes.
Both times.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, we can get to it, though.
We can. Before we get going there, let's talk about top five songs in America and the top five movies in America this week. We'll start off with the songs. Don't Funk With My Heart by the Black Eyed Peas dropped to number five after being number three last week, so that went down two steps. Don'tcha by the Pussycat Dolls featuring Busta Rhymes stays at number four this week. In addition to that, Holla Back Girl by Gwen Stefani falls from 2 to 3 because Rihanna's Pon de Replay jumps up from 5 to number 2.
Yeah, they realize it got that high.
Yeah.
It is a good song.
It is a very good song.
I didn't realize it got to number 2, though.
Yeah, it charted at number 2. And of course, We Belong Together by Mariah Carey is still dominating the top of the charts.
Was 2 the highest that it got?
Yeah,
I want to say yes.
I don't think it ever takes over.
Yeah, I don't think it ever takes over her. Takes over We Belong Together either.
Yeah, I figured her first number 1 was Umbrella. Actually, no, I don't think it was Umbrella because Jay-Z didn't have a number 1 until I want to say Run This Town. So I don't even think that was number 1.
Rihanna's first number 1 hit was SOS.
Oh, God, yes, that was. God, that was a banger.
Yeah. Yeah. You do the movies?
Yes, let's do the movies for this week. We have 3 new entries into the top 5 from last week, and those are 5 through 3. Making $18.6 million this week was Stealth, a movie that I have no recollection of whatsoever.
I feel like I do, but I don't.
Had Jamie Foxx in it.
Oh, there we go. Okay. There we
and
go.
And Jessica Biel.
Yep.
It's not good.
No. That wasn't one I was thinking of. It is the movie, but I'm saying it wasn't one I was thinking of. Because Josh Lucas. Is that? Yeah, Glory.
Yeah, Josh Lucas in it too.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't remember this.
It had a $135 million budget and made $79 million.
Worst losses in cinematic history for Columbia? Oh, God.
Yeah, it was bad.
Shit, so
ooh. Very bad. Number 4, making $18.8 million, was Must Love Dogs. This movie from Warner Brothers Pictures. Don't remember this one either.
Sounds like a kid's movie.
Yeah.
It probably was a kid's movie.
No, it's Diane Lane and John Cusack.
Yeah.
So it's a comedy.
Oh, one of those things. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, now that I'm looking at the poster, I remember this now. Yep. And then number 3 in America, making over $23 million, was Sky High.
Great fucking movie. That was a summer 2005?
Yep.
Shit, I thought that came out in like the winter. Yeah, Sky High is a really good movie.
Oh, yeah, I remember this now. This was with Kurt Russell, Kelly Preston.
Daniel Panabaker.
Yeah. Yep, Sky High was really good. And then number 2 and number 1 flip places from the past week, so Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which made over $26.7 million, dropped down to number 2, making $32 million, and overtaking Charlie and the Chocolate Factory was Wedding Crashers. I mean, $32 million. I didn't say that.
Yeah.
The second week, right, Wedding Crashers was in number
1? Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, Wedding Crashers was one of those movies where, like, you found out from one of your buddies that it was funny as hell, so then you went to go watch it, and, yeah, just kept matriculating.
Yes.
I feel like we're going to get another movie on this in the next time we do this. Did that come out? No, we got a couple more weeks. We got a couple more weeks for that one. Never mind.
Okay, let's bring it into Raw. July 25th, 2005 from the Gund Arena in Cleveland. Kurt Angle's here to open the show. We got the Kurt Angle Invitational coming up. He's not wasting any time. Wants the person to come out. Christy Hemme comes out, and Kurt thinks she's going to be his opponent, but instead she introduces Cleveland's own Eugene. Angle says Eugene's not from Cleveland. He takes out his jacket, reveals a Braylon Edwards Browns jersey. Oh, man.
We are dating ourselves with that one.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, holy shit, I haven't seen one of those.
At first, I didn't remember who number 17 was. I'm like, is that a Kozar jersey? But then I'm like, oh, right, Braylon Edwards wore 17.
Let me tell you, there were a few years before they got Brandon Marshall where I really wanted the Bears to get Braylon Edwards, and he was not
good.
You're
a Michigan fan, aren't you?
Yes.
Exactly.
But he also couldn't catch.
Yeah, Braylon had a bad problem with his hands for a long time.
Yeah.
Oh, so this would have been the year that he got drafted, because he drafted 05, 30.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That's a wonderful, wonderful draft. Wonder who the Bears got right after him. Who would have been the running back for the Browns at the time? 2005 Cleveland Browns. Their running back was, oh, God, Ruben Jones. Ugh. Ruben Drones, William Green, Lee Suggs. Yeah, they could have used him or Benson or Cadillac. Well, they would have gone Ronnie Brown had he slipped from number 2.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But, yeah. I mean, wow, Braylon Edwards made a Pro Bowl. But looking at the other wide receivers, Troy Williamson, garbage. Mike Williams, garbage. Matt Jones was a first-round pick, garbage. Mark Clayton was a first-round pick, garbage. Roddy White was 27. Which is crazy when you look at the wide receivers on this list.
Yep.
And then, God, we drafted Mark Bradley second round. That was great. So, yeah, rest in peace, Vincent Jackson, too, because he was second round pick 61st.
Yes.
So, yeah, they obviously maybe could have not been done better than wide receiver than Braylon Edwards, but,
you know. Kurt Angle, even though Eugene's not from Cleveland, decides to just let him be in the challenge anyway. Kurt pulls his jersey off and wipes his nose with it. The clock's running. And Kurt's just kind of messing with him, but there's only a minute left on the clock, so he gets the ankle lock in with 10 seconds left. But Eugene rolls through it and sends him out of the ring. So Eugene won the gold medals.
How about that? Wow. Good for Eugene. That was a good return for Eugene also.
Yeah.
He got a good pop.
Yeah, he did.
He did, yeah. I think I remember watching this, and I think I remember catching up late and seeing Eugene on the replay after the commercials getting this. So.
Yeah. John Cena tells Eric Bischoff that he should be excited for Eugene because there's actually a winner in his family. Bischoff's not pleased with Cena's antics and turns around and starts talking while Cena's behind him, but Cena just leaves. you know. We move on to Viscera and a little person against Antonio and another little person, and Viscera gets the win, you know. Sure.
Boy, they made some choices with some of these matches in these two shows, these four shows that we watched.
Yeah.
It is dire in the Raw mid and lower card.
It really fucking is, dog. Like, I'm sitting here watching, and like, how am I wasting so much time on the heartthrobs and little people? And what the fuck is
going with Raw 5? Boogeyman and Kennedy and Lashley are coming to save SmackDown, and I don't think anyone's coming to Raw. But fucking Kurt, you know,
White, like, this is Russo level shit. Well, not Russo level shit.
I
say that because Russo level shit is on a different planet. But it feels like if you just stuck Russo in 2005, you might get some of these storylines.
Yeah, because I'm trying to think if Raw gets any like big call ups, and they really don't, because all three of them go to SmackDown.
Nah, I mean, yeah, Bobby Lashley's one of them. Finley, I think, is another.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the other big call up to SmackDown? Ken Kennedy comes up to SmackDown.
I mean, I guess, you know, Raw is going to get Triple H back. I think they're going to get Cade Murdoch soon. So that's something.
Murdoch, I forgot about Cade Murdoch.
I think they come this year.
Yeah,
either 05 or 06 they come around. I feel like Raw gets more of their injection next year because then you get Crime Time. Get a couple of folks back. This is probably the most you'll see for Raw right now is, you know, Carlito and Chris Masters.
Yes.
From what I remember.
Let me get a tribute video to Alfred Hayes, which is very well done. I mean, you can tell, like, which people
they loved.
They were high on compared to who gets a full video and who just kind of gets the graphic. And, yeah, he got, like, a full 2-minute video, which was very good.
Yeah.
Shelton Benjamin is in Eric Bischoff's office, wants another shot at the Intercontinental title. But Bischoff turns it down, says that Shelton can face Snitsky and Chris Masters in a handicap match instead. Shelton's not happy about it, which, you know, it makes sense. Maria's with Chris Jericho, says that she loves Fozzie, wants to know if any other Muppets will be in attendance tonight. And Jericho says he's going to beat Cena in Battle of the Bands. And then we go and do Battle of the Bands. Cena plays Bad Bad Man, which is not very good live.
It is not.
I mean, it's not Jericho really a good song at all.
But the video's fun.
Good, but like, it's a music video. It's kind of how you need it to be good, because the song's not.
That's true.
Yeah.
Jericho refuses to perform because the fans in Cleveland are biased against him, and he knows they want to boo him, so he just kind of leaves. Carlito's in Eric Bischoff's office now. Bischoff wanted to talk to him about John Cena. Carlito has a match against Cena tonight. Chris Jericho's a special referee. If Carlito wins, he gets a title match against Cena next week.
Indeed. So now Shawn Michaels is in the ring. There hasn't been a lot of matches tonight, by the way.
No.
Hasn't been a lot of matches on this show. Shawn said that Hogan isn't there tonight because he's out promoting his new reality show, Hogan Knows Best. Shawn said that he has no aspirations to be a rap star, a rock star, a movie star, or even have a television show. He just wants to be the best in-ring performer WWE has ever had. Having 5-star matches and tearing down the house on a regular basis is not enough for him, but it would be enough for Hogan, who's been living off a reputation that he created 20 years ago. He goes out every single night and recreates himself. Doesn't mind earning his stripes, but Hogan does the same stuff every night. Seems like he's shooting. Shawn isn't allowed to do or say anything that might hurt Hogan, but what are they going to do? Fire him? He's the main event of SummerSlam.
It's true.
People wanted the old HBK. Now, guess what? You got him. And Shawn wants to know what Hogan's going to do when Shawn will not lay down for him.
Yeah, this is good. You know, I like Shawn being like this. It's the only time he was actually willing to do it in his second run, which really, I think, says a lot about Hogan. You know. We get Chris Masters and Gene Snitsky against Shelton Benjamin. So they come back from the break, and Snitsky's in the ring, and they do Shelton's entrance, and they do Masters' entrance.
Which, very bizarre.
Yeah, I don't get that. Shelton submits to the Master Lock, and Chris won't release it until Big Show comes down. They boot Snitsky. Masters leaves. So we're going to do Big Show against Chris Masters.
Someone named Cameron was eliminated from the Diva Search. Sorry to her. They did a hot dog eating contest. Layla won and cannot be eliminated next week because of her immunity.
Cameron. We're down to four. Kane and Edge are having a stretcher match. Kane attacks Edge on the entrance, and we get underway. Kane was going to tombstone Edge on the steps, but Edge DDT'd him instead. Kane chokeslams Edge from the apron onto the stretcher. Jesus. And then later, Edge gets Kane on the stretcher, and Kane sits up, but Edge hits him with the briefcase and rolls him over the line. Then Kane just kind of jumps up from it, throws Edge against the stage, and tombstones Lita on the ramp.
And then while all that hullabaloo is happening, while the mics are all off, Matt Hardy resurfaces once again to fight with Edge.
Yeah.
And then Kane eventually commandeers the ambulance after Lita was put in it and drives away with it.
Yeah. So
so we've got a kidnapping here.
You know. And it's time for John Cena against Carlito. Chris Jericho is a pretty fair ref until Cena goes for the FU, and then Jericho kicks him in the groin, hits a lion salt. Carlito covers him and gets the win, so he'll be in a title match next week against Cena, which I don't get why Jericho would want someone else to be in a title match.
Because he's giving Carlito false confidence, and they want him to be the champion so that Jericho can be the champion, because they're overlooking Carlito and he's too stupid right now to realize it. Yeah, that's the goal, because they fear Cena, but rather instead of facing him, they want to take him out and give the title to somebody who is less of competition for him. That's why.
That's fair.
That's why. It's a layered story that I wish they would try and do more.
Yeah. Okay. You sold me on it.
Yep. There you go.
Yeah. We just move to SmackDown here.
Yep. We'll do We'll do the sports break after this SmackDown, because it's been 1 week and then we have to do it again. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. July 28th, 2005, from Rochester, New York.
Which Blue Cross Arena, I believe.
Not
right?
A town that they're running these days, I don't believe.
Not too often, although I think that sometimes they do. I know that they definitely must have, Harper or Brody was alive in there, because I think they've done at least one show for.
Yeah, well, because he's from up there.
Yeah, he was originally from Rochester, I believe. So, Blue Cross Arena. The last show that they did actually was 2017.
Yeah,
a SmackDown from there in June of 2017 was the last time they were there.
It's been a minute.
Yeah, it has. They usually frequent like Albany and Buffalo.
Yes. There, so. Teddy Long's in the ring. Wants to thank everyone for watching Great American Bash. If you missed it, you missed a hell of a show.
You did not.
No, you did not. Undertaker is the number one contender now, so Teddy Long's ready to announce the SummerSlam main event, but JBL's here. He beat Batista on Sunday like he said he would. He just isn't champion because Batista got disqualified on purpose. Teddy Long says JBL can have another title shot someday, but, you know, right now it's Undertaker's turn. JBL says it's in his contract that if he wins by disqualification or countout, he's the number one contender. Teddy Long says that's fine. Tonight he can go one-on-one with The Undertaker for the right to be number one contender.
With The Undertaker. He actually did it, and that was cool.
He did. It was great. So pretty clearly what happened here is they wanted Muhammad Hassan to be the number one contender, and then they couldn't do that. And then I think they thought they were going to get Brock, and that didn't happen. So now we're stuck with JBL again. I do remember the SummerSlam match being a lot better than the Great American Bash.
The SummerSlam match is fun as hell, because JBL always thrives in those big brawl type plunder matches, and Batista is obviously growing as a performer, so that they mesh really well together in that match.
Yeah.
It's a really fun one. Kind of a forgotten gem.
Yeah. So we get Booker T and Chris Benoit against Christian and Orlando Jordan. Benoit makes Orlando tap after like 17 minutes. Christian didn't bother helping Orlando after the match because why should he care?
It's true.
It's fair.
Benoit and Booker are in an even better tag match next week.
Yes. Anna will convince Heidenreich to cut his hair like Hawk. Then they go squash some jobbers. Cool.
Yep, just cool standard fare there.
Melina's concerned about Eminem's image after losing to Heidenreich and Animal, so she hired them a publicist, and it's Jillian Hall. And the thing is, she's got a big growth on her face.
She's an image, like, really terrible because she's a beautiful woman. Like, Jillian's gorgeous.
And yeah, I mean,
fucking growth on her face.
It's terrible for that. It's terrible because there are people who are physically deformed who are, you know, probably fans of the show who probably feel bad watching this. Like, right,
knowing that it's completely fake.
Yeah, like, yeah. And there's also no real payoff to it. So, well,
besides
Boogeyman, yeah.
Yeah. And then Jillian becomes a singer.
Yes.
So,
it's fucking great. I really wanted Billy and Jilly, man.
Ray tells Dominic, who is busy playing his PSP, that he'll tell him the secret when he gets older. But right now, they need to go to the ring.
PSP was fucking cool, man. I was gutted when I broke my PSP.
It feels like they broke easily because I also broke mine, but just it was ahead of its time, man.
It was so easy, bro. I'm pissed off already.
Well, I wish they would do another one, but then they tried the Vita and it sucked.
I mean, it's possible because, like, okay, look at the Switch. Like, I feel like you've made it possible to have a really good mobile console in this day and age. Sony just has to know how to do it.
Yeah. Ray goes to the ring and he looks relaxed now because he doesn't have to worry about the secret anymore. You know, thanks the fans for their support. But then Eddie comes out. He always wins. And heels lie. So
does Eddie.
Yeah. Eddie starts telling the story and he tells Dominic that Ray isn't his father. Eddie is. Dominic's very upset. Eddie keeps talking about how he was separated from his wife and was out, you know, with other women, got one pregnant. That one ended up being Dominic's mother. Ray and his wife were struggling to get pregnant, so he just kind of gave Dominic over to them. Now, the timeline and all this doesn't really add up, but if you're not looking super into it, which no one was in 2005, it's close enough.
Pretty much.
So. Melina is facing Tori Wilson, and she gets the win, so that was good.
Jillian Hall paying dividends so far.
Yes. The Mexicools are hanging out. Concession manager tells them to get back to work, so they decide to take some concessions out into the arena. Kind of offensive, but you know. Scotty Too Hotty is facing William Regal. The Mexicools come out, throw popcorn on Tony Chimmel, and give Cole and Taz some popcorn and drinks, and they go in the ring and take out the ref and take out Regal and Scotty.
See,
and
I wish
throw nachos on them.
I wish that there weren't so many ridiculous undertones to all this, because like the actions themselves and these beatdowns are actually all very good. It's just it's very offensive.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's not ideal.
It's not, because again, every action that they're taking here with these big beatdowns of the Cruiserweight division, they're all good.
Yes.
It's just, yeah, again, this bullshit.
And then it's time for JBL against The Undertaker. They get like 20 minutes.
They didn't need 20 minutes.
No. The ref goes down. JBL hits Undertaker with a chair. But, you know, there's no ref. Undertaker gets up and hits Tombstone. Still no ref. Then Randy Orton comes out and hits an RKO and leaves. And then JBL pins Undertaker for the win. So Randy's back. That's fun.
He is. They basically mimicked the same situation that happened back on the night of Orton's drafting. So obviously that means a month and a half later, he's back and we're ready to go.
Yeah. And that was the end of the first week.
That was the end of the first week. Now let's take a dive into the sports world and everything else that happened through this week in time. The day before, the day of the Great American Bash, Ricky Williams returned after a one-year absence from the Dolphins. Of course, you can, if you're unfamiliar with Ricky Williams' story, you can watch Run, Ricky, Run on ESPN+.
Yes,
a very underrated 30 for 30, in my view.
Mm-hmm.
On that Monday night, July 25th, the Devil Rays beat the Red Sox 4-3 in 10 innings. Why am I bringing this up? Because it was the Red Sox first extra inning game all season after 98 nine inning games. at the time that had never been done before in the history of baseball. Nobody went that long without having an extra inning game.
Oh, wow.
I don't know, like, by how much they beat them or if that was because it had the previous record had been 97, now it's 98. But it was significant at that on that night. On Tuesday, also dealing with Red Sox Devil Rays stuff happened. Matt Clement of the Red Sox was hit by a ball and was forced to leave the pitcher's mound during the third inning as a precautionary measure. Johnny Damon later hit a home run in the 10th inning to give them a 10-9 victory. So after not having any extra inning games, they played two in a row the ensuing 2 days.
Yeah, you know.
Let's see. So there was a lot of UEFA qualifying, but that's all qualifying rounds and whatnot, so it's kind of hard to get too into. Let's see. On July 28th, the New York Knicks officially named Larry Brown as their head coach, signing a 5-year, $50 million contract, the richest ever for a coach manager in sports history. Let's see how that one works out. Not too well.
Yeah, I was so confused by that. I was 13, so I guess I wasn't really paying attention to the going on of the Detroit Pistons locker room. But I was so confused why Larry Brown would want to leave the Pistons and go to the Knicks. But now I understand that Pistons just wanted Larry Brown the fuck out.
Yeah, and now he's Penny Hardaway's assistant coach at Memphis.
I hit you fast, man. Like, is Larry Brown the coach who's been the most blasé-faire about his jobs ever? Because he's never stayed more than like 4 or 5 years at a position.
I think, like, you pull him up, he's worked for, like, as a head coach, like, just as a head coach, he's been at, like, 12 different places in college and NBA.
Did SMU just random as hell recently?
Yeah.
Torino, he was a head coach in fucking Italy? For a team that doesn't even exist anymore? Like, that's wild.
I forgot he was with the Bobcats.
He's he's 80. He's going to be 81 when the season starts. Why are you on Penny Hardaway's staff? Did you even coach? You probably did with the Knicks. Forgot. But, like, yeah, that just doesn't make any fucking sense to me. But maybe Larry Brown is just a basketball lifer. He's going to live and die with the game of basketball.
Yeah, I mean, oh, yeah, he was the Olympic coach, too.
Yeah, you don't remember last time that America embarrassed us on the world stage? It's because Larry Brown is that coach.
Like, I thought Pop was doing a terrible job the past 2 weeks, but I'm sure if you went back and watched that team, like, they are just not watchable.
No. And that was the thing about that 2004 Olympic basketball team, is that Larry Brown was their head coach. Who was his lead assistant? Greg Popovich. And the worry was that this team that just won the gold was going to play or focus too much on sets and trying to run, you know, the philosophical game of basketball at the Olympics under Pop, which I guess they tried to do.
Yeah, they did. But Kevin Durant prelims
and too yeah, good. And then they lost 3 games between the prelims and then that first game of the Olympics. And KD was like, no. We are going to play basketball my way. Give me the ball. Get the fuck out of the way. And let's go dominate these teams like we're supposed to. And I think besides the Spain game France did cover. Like, they U.S. covered every game but the semifinal and the final because they just dominated. So thank God Pop just got the fuck out the way. I wonder who's going to be the next coach of USA basketball, but thank God it's not a Larry Brown disciple.
Yeah, I mean, like, if
wait. Do you know who else was on that staff?
Who?
Think Big East head coach. It's from a school you would never believe.
Oh, God. Who is it?
Oliver Purnell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I remember
insane.
That now that you said that.
He was head coach at Clemson at the time. And they brought him on. It was him, Pop, and Roy were the assistants on that 0-4 team. No wonder they were terrible.
Well, yeah, and see, now, like, it's like, oh, you've got Steve Kerr and Jay Wright. Just make either one of them the head coach, and you'll beat every team by 24 points.
I thought about Jay Wright as potential Olympic basketball head coach. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know if there's anybody in the league right now. I don't think Spo wants to do it. I'm trying to go around NBA. I don't think there's anybody that would want to coach Olympic, or at least is good enough to do it.
No, I think it feels like Jay Wright's probably next up, especially because he's on the staff already.
Yeah, it's not going to be Lloyd Pierce. I know that much.
No.
No.
Do we have any more sports news?
Yes. So also on that day, July 28th, significant news out of America's Dairyland, because Barry Alvarez announced that he's stepping down after the upcoming season to stay on as the school's athletic director. Defensive coordinator Brett Bielema will assume the reins as head coach in 2006. Yes. Now, to be fair to Brett and the recruiting class that they had, they went 12-1 in 06.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he started off pretty well. But yes, this will be Barry Alvarez's last season as head coach for the Badgers.
And I'll give, this is obviously have ramifications for two head coaches. I remember when Alvarez stepped down, and Wisconsin before Barry Alvarez is very much like Florida before Steve Spurrier, right?
Yeah.
It's a non-existent college football franchise. And then Barry Alvarez comes in, they win three Big Ten titles under him, and he kind of establishes himself at the university so much where he can just retire and be AD. Bielema, who's now head coach at U of I, I thought Bielema actually had a really good run at Wisconsin. Yeah, a lot of the early players were Alvarez, but then he won three straight Big Ten titles in the early 2010s, and those were his guys. So
yeah, no, I think Bielema actually did a good job. I think he's going to do a pretty good job at Illinois too.
Took him three straight Rose Bowls, by the way. Well, of course, because they're Big Ten champion.
Yeah, and I think his ultimately the way that he likes to build his teams and do his thing is more built for the Big Ten versus the SEC, what they tried with Arkansas.
Yes. Yeah, and like it's Arkansas, right?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Like there Arkansas is a pretty good program with a lot of money invested into it, obviously, but it's really tough sledding in that division.
Arkansas is a shade above Vanderbilt.
Okay. Yeah.
We're talking about the SEC. They're a shade above Vanderbilt. So, like, yeah, you can go 8-5, 7-6 at Arkansas, go to a bowl game, win your bowl game, but Arkansas is not going to be a dominant force ever. So, you know, he was under Belichick for a couple years, too. So maybe now he comes to U of I and he's able to do what Lovey is not able to do. And that's, you know, mold college players into decent NFL players and, you know, hopefully go in and contend for the West at it. We'll see.
Yes. So two final things. On July 30th, Sidney Crosby was selected number one overall by the Pittsburgh Penguins in the 2005 NHL entry draft.
It's a good pick.
It was a pretty good pick. Yeah, pretty good pick, I would say. Other notables in that first round include Bobby Ryan, who was picked number two. By the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim.
He was okay for a while.
Carey Price was picked number five by the Montreal Canadiens. Very good pick for them. Anze Kopitar was picked by the Kings number 11, and Mark Stahl was picked by the Rangers, the pick directly after. Not too bad. Not too bad at all. Also, Jack Johnson was picked number three by the Carolina Hurricanes. He's been coasting on reputation for a very long time.
Yes.
Also, Tuukka Rask was taken 21st overall by the Toronto Maple Leafs, and TJ Oshie was taken 24th by the Blues.
Yeah, there you go.
Those are the main notables for the first round here. Other people I am seeing: James Neal,
Stasny, Quick,
Quick, Chris Letang, Ben Bishop, Keith Yandel in the fourth round. Not too bad. No one really after that though.
Blackhawks took Joel Merson in the fourth round that year.
Nicholas! Congratulations on your retirement, Nicholas. Yeah, these drafts don't really turn up until 2006, 2007, when like, you know, there's actually something to care about. Yeah, these are the down years of Blackhawks draft years, and the last one, thankfully, because like, you know, you're hoping Jack Skilly turns into somebody.
Yeah, I mean, they did trade him for Frolik, who ended up being pretty good on both of those later cup teams. Pretty true, you know.
And then last but not least, on that Sunday, the Baseball Hall of Fame inducted Ryan Sandberg and Wade Boggs, and also honored Jerry Coleman and Peter Gammons for winning two awards for broadcasting and writing, respectively.
Yeah. See, I was happy for Sandberg, but I specifically remember his speech being all about playing the game the right way. So I assume if you watch it, you're just going to hate it.
I remember that, too. Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. Thinking back on the speech was very preachy and it was very like, because I mean, Ryan Sandberg is a great player. Mm-hmm. I guess when you talk about quote unquote playing the game the right way, the fundamentals, the character that you bring to the game every day, like, yeah, he exudes that. You know, I guess he's what you would want out of, like, when it comes to determination. He's the kind of player that you want on the field. I'm just, like, going over in my head right now. I'm like, hey, you might want to stop self-serving, my guy, because this is very, very difficult to hear you do.
But, yeah.
Yeah, great player. Fucking great player. One of the best second basemen out there.
Yes.
All right. That's all.
Okay.
So let's move on to Raw. That week, but yes, we will start off with the top five songs in America and the top movies in America. So, Must Love Dogs dropped or stayed at number five, I should say, from the previous week, made about 7 million or so. Sky High dropped to fourth, making about 9 million. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory dropped to number three, making about 10 million. In addition to that, Wedding Crashers went to number two after making 16.5 million. And the number one movie at the box office this week, making 30.675 million, was The Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh God, I went to go see that first week.
That was shitty. It was like hyped up.
It was. Time. Yeah. Like, oh, they got
because they hyped up Jessica Simpson as Daisy Duke, and this is
yes.
what I yep.
you know, the height of Jessica Simpson's popularity.
They made a very bad PS2 game for it.
thank God I don't remember that. yeah, Johnny Knoxville and Sean William Scott probably should never be taken seriously as a, you know, two leads in a movie. Yeah. It's funny, I don't think I've seen Sean William Scott since what's that fucking movie he did with Ed Helms. Role Models.
Role Models. Yes, Role Models is very good.
Funny as hell, but I don't think I've seen him since then. Which, oh wait, that's he's in Lethal Weapon. That's right.
I think he's just kind of living off. He's got Ice Age. He was in the
Ice Age. He was
in the new ones. Yeah, because they made like two or three new ones, and then yeah, he got in it, and he's probably just living off that now.
No shit. Hey, that's a good avenue because Ice Age. You're never gonna not have Ice Age movies. They're gonna keep coming. Now I'm curious how many fucking Ice Age movies there are.
I think there's six because they made three originally.
Holy shit, there's another one coming out next year. That's crazy.
Yeah, because so again, they had the three original and then they brought them back like in the early 2010s.
Yeah, they've had so many short films because of the fucking squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's crazy that Ice Age has stuck around that long. But anyway, yeah, no, Sean William Scott. It was a terrible fucking movie. I can't believe I went to go see that.
Oh, man.
And then as far as the number, the five songs in America.
Roger Ebert gave the film one star, calling it a, quote, lame brain, outdated wheeze, and wondered if Burt Reynolds' part in the film is, quote, karma-wise, the second half of what Smokey and the Bandit was the first half of. Yeah, worst film of 2005 is what I'm saying, and it was nominated for 1, 2, 7 raspberries. Didn't win any, though.
My God.
Anyways, the top five songs in America, the first three were in last week's top five, but we have some two new additions here. At number five, we have Bow Wow and Omarion's Let Me Hold You, which jumped up from the previous week of 8. To number five, Lose Control by Missy Elliott featuring Ciara and Fat Man Scoop went up to number four from being at number six the previous week.
Yes.
Doncha moved up a spot from 4 to 3, and number one and number two remain We Belong Together and Ponda Replay.
Oh my God, this is just a good summer for music, and rap music in particular.
Yes. And then we do have a couple of wrestling notes this week. The big story, Chris Jericho planning to take a leave from WWE after SummerSlam. You know, his deal expired a couple months ago. They gave him a short-term extension just to get through SummerSlam. And then he's planning to just go do his music and maybe go to TNA if they blow him away. But that'll never come to be. We're just not going to see him for a couple of years.
It's kind of funny because they did Enemy by Fozzy as the 2006 Bound for Glory theme song. And people thought, oh, he's going to TNA. Never did.
Yeah.
Just never did. Just never, ever did.
Well, they also did the Fozzy song for TakeOver Chicago 2.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
and he was definitely not there at that
point. No, he was.
He didn't really leave until 2009.
That is correct. Yeah. But yeah, Chris Jericho is going to be a free agent for the first time in 6 years. And again, nothing will come of it, but you know. WWE reports that Brock Lesnar rejected a written offer to return to the company. They were unable to come to terms on this go-around of negotiations, mainly because he wanted the deal that he would ultimately end up getting in 2012. You know, he was on that wave in 2005 where he wanted, you know, less dates and more money and private travel and all that. And see, that would have been interesting because I don't think they were ready to have a champion that wasn't there every week at that point. Mm. And I don't know what you're going to do with him if he's not the champion.
No, they were not.
So, but also, you know, I've talked about it before too, is that his UFC run kind of, this second run wouldn't have been possible without the UFC run.
Agree.
So, you know, kind of all happened for a reason. Hulk Hogan was promoting the SummerSlam match with Shawn Michaels and said that he was a bigger movie star than The Rock or Steve Austin, which is hilarious.
I mean, yes, he was in Rocky, but like,
yeah,
still,
like, you know, if you adjust it for inflation, my movies are more popular than The Rock's, which isn't true, even like just with Scorpion King, like not even looking at it now, but like,
wow, you know, what a shock that fucking Terry's lying about something again.
Yeah. Austin's been in the business for 18 years and it was on top for four. I wrestled main events for 25 years. I could pull my dick out and I'd be on top for four more years. It's called cheap heat.
I'm sorry, who said this?
Hogan.
Oh, fuck Hogan.
Come on.
Steve Austin's the only one left that I'd like to wrestle, but his neck is injured and we don't really click, and I don't know if he and I could do business. No, you can't.
No one can do business with you, Terry. You are a fucking nightmare to do business with, brother.
Yeah, we're going to probably get some more stuff from him because he's going to be on, you know, all kinds of shows and stuff promoting this in the next couple weeks. So stay tuned for more lies from Hulk Hogan. Also, Ring of Honor has lost 2005 MVP candidate James Gibson, who has been re-signed by WWE, known as Jamie Noble. He will be back later this year.
He sure will. Big losses for Ring of Honor, even though they're starting to they're starting to purvey the internet scene a lot.
Yeah, because you know they lost Punk, and you know they're sharing Samoa Joe at this point, mm-hmm. and now they're losing Noble, who did really good work for them. Also, WWE is bringing Brian Kendrick back. So
they are also one quick thing about this week in 2005. There were two debuts that were pretty notable in the Hot 100. One was Like You, Bow Wow featuring Ciara, which was the highest charted debut, which was 63rd. In addition to that, a little bit further down the countdown here at 87 was the All-American Rejects Dirty Little Secret, which of course is going to make, I think, some pretty big moves in the summer and fall.
Yes. Yeah. So we get to Raw from
Uncasville.
Uncasville at the Mohegan Sun.
Yes. Mohegan Resort. Sun Arena in Uncasville. It's one of two Mohegan Suns in the Northeast Mid-Atlantic. The other one, of course, being in Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania.
So is the one in Connecticut just like people from New York City and stuff just go up there for the weekend or whatever?
Yeah, pretty much. Even though they've done some they've put some casinos in on like the islands.
Yeah.
In New York, so they're trying to keep people in the sphere, so to speak. But yes, Uncasville, it's sort of close by to everything, so you can just go up there for a weekend. They always run. Back before all the pop-ups started happening in Manhattan or whatever, they always ran commercials for all the casinos up in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Including Mohegan Sun and Foxwoods in addition, because I know the song. It's the jingles in my head. I can hear it right now.
So we start with Chris Jericho in the ring. Him and Bischoff have a plan to end the embarrassment that is John Cena's reign. Last week they exposed him and he lost a match despite Jericho being a very good and fair official. He's going to tear Cena apart at SummerSlam and leave with the title. And Cena comes out and they just kind of start brawling right away. And Eric Bischoff brings out security to break it up. Bischoff is sick of Cena not respecting him. So Chris Jericho's the guest referee again tonight in Cena's title match against Carlito. That's not great. Shelton and Big Show are teaming up against Snitsky and Chris Masters. Shelton, you know, does a good job kind of playing the babyface in peril for most of the time.
He does.
You know, Big Show gets a hot tag and cleans house and then hits choke slam for the victory.
Indeed. So we move forward to Eugene versus whomever in the Eugene invitation.
Yes.
Turns out to be Kurt Angle. Eugene told Angle that he's not from Connecticut. He's from Pittsburgh. Angle said that Eugene wasn't from Cleveland, but he let it slide. He's not going to find a hometown hero from the Mohegan Sun. Well, wrong you are, Kurt. Apparently so, because they decided to go the route of, oh, this is an Indian reservation. And, of course, that means that Tatanka has to come out.
Tatanka, who will turn this into a run on the Raw mid-card next year.
He's on SmackDown for the longest time.
Yeah. They wrestle for a little bit, and then Angle jumps in and attacks Eugene, but Tatanka and Eugene double-team Angle and send him out of the ring.
One of the more ridiculous things that has happened here so far, but
yeah,
we move forward. Kurt Angle tells Todd Grisham he will get his revenge on Eugene next week when they're in his hometown of Pittsburgh.
Yes.
So they are just hitting that Ohio-Pennsylvania loop up hard here, I see. Yes. So it's kind of weird because they went from Cleveland to Connecticut to all the way to freaking Pittsburgh.
You know.
Very lopsided and backwards. We have Vince.
Yeah, Vince is here.
It's a special edition of Raw because they've become the longest running episodic weekly television program in history, which is, it's true, yeah. But it is true.
Kind of depending on what metrics you're going by, yeah.
Vince said that the classic thing to do would be to thank the fans all over the world, but instead he's going to thank himself because he makes good business decisions. That's why he brought in Eric Bischoff. That's why he brought ECW back. Tonight he's making another good business decision, allegedly, and that's bringing Matt Hardy back. But Edge and Lita are not here, and thus Matt Hardy shoots on both Amy and Adam.
That's lame.
This was so corny in hindsight. I'm sorry. It was really just a lot of whining.
Yes. Kerwin White tells Vince that he's been considering moving to Greenwich, and Vince says that Kerwin's middle class, and Vince has forgotten what that's like. That's great.
As I was saying before, a little rough on matches here, so we get Val Venus versus Rob Conway for some reason.
Yeah, Rob Conway's got a new look and a new theme.
Technically, he's had it for a couple of weeks. It's been on Sunday Night Heat.
Yeah.
Yes.
This match also could have been on Sunday Night Heat.
Yeah, it could have. It would have been better for everybody involved.
Not good, and the fans don't like it. And then Rob Conway won with the Ego Trip, which was always a cool finisher, so I'll give him that.
Matches like this are why sometimes I can level with, you know, good matches happening on TV and not crap like this.
Yeah.
Like, my God.
Exactly.
It's it's all bad. So we get a career. This is being dubbed in, you know, advertised as a career highlight film for the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels. But first, we go to apparently the desk of Larry King. And then Shawn Michaels imitating Hulk Hogan comes out. And this is going to be one of the most entertaining segments of all time. There's no other way to say it. On camera, he says that he's a great guy, but brother, when the camera goes off, it's a different story, brother. It's not how old you are. It's how old you feel, brother. A caller called in from Battle Creek, Michigan, just to ask the Hulkster why he won't come to Battle Creek, and he says that he won't because he only makes the big towns. Once the people are in the building, he's already got their cash, so he doesn't care. That's Shawn Michaels. He wants to make sure they get their money's worth, and he's not about that, brother.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, it's good stuff. You know, Michaels ends up super kicking the Larry King impersonator. And
this after faking a hip injury.
Yes. rips off the Hogan costume. Michaels wants to know what Hogan's going to do at SummerSlam when reality kicks him right in the face. So, yeah, you know, it's good. It comes all around. I wish Shawn would have been able to do this a little bit longer than he did.
And just the Hogan feud, because he's on his money in this role as a heel. And it's familiar Shawn, but still different. Because obviously he can't do what he did back in the day, but it's also familiar Shawn stick. He's really good at it.
Exactly. He is. Like, can you imagine if like he kept this and they had him feud with Cena after Jericho instead of going the Kurt Angle route?
That would have been insane.
Yeah.
That would have been crazy if they would have kept going with that. And they very much, well, it could have, because Unforgiven would have been a big match. They kept that going to Survivor Series. Cena was fighting Angle at Survivor Series, I believe.
Yep.
You know, even if they wanted to insert Angle and have that be a triple threat, because they very well could have. I know we're like booking in hindsight, but that would have been fun. That would have been really fun.
And instead, we get Shawn Michaels versus Chris Masters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
although
Shawn did put in a fucking performance.
This is true.
Survivor Series. So that notwithstanding, that probably would have been fun.
Okay. So we get the Raw Divas search again. This week it's Summer that gets cut. So best wishes to her. We're down to four. They're doing some inflatable jousting this week, and Rob Schneider's hosting. I didn't watch it. I'm sure it was not very good.
They introduced him as Saturday Night Live's Rob Schneider, which I thought was really weird because he'd already been in a few movies, including the one that they're trying to, you know, fish for right now.
Deuce
Bigelow. That's a bad movie.
By 2005, he had been off Saturday Night Live for about 7 years.
So we're basically just like, we gotta just say Saturday Night Live. It's probably, you know, very recognizable.
Yeah.
Even that memorable of a Saturday Night Live character?
Because I think
the 90s and Saturday Night Live, I'm not thinking Rob Schneider.
Hell no.
No, because he's there with Adam Sandler and Chris Rock and Chris Farley.
Hey, and I'm thinking of those guys. I'm thinking of John Lovitz. I'm thinking of Dennis Miller. There's so many folks that come up to mind in just the early to mid 90s. I'm not thinking of Rob Schneider.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, we're down to four in the Diva search, so that's cool. Carlito and John Cena are facing off for the WWE Championship. Chris Jericho is a special referee.
Bischoff comes down to ringside.
Yeah. Jericho's not calling it down the middle this week, which does not seem good. Cena overcomes the fast counts and all that, though, and it's the FU, but Jericho refuses to count. So Cena takes out Jericho and Bischoff, and then hits another FU, and a new ref comes out and counts the fall. Jericho comes back in and hits a low blow, and hits Cena with a TV camera and puts him in the walls of Jericho as Bischoff slaps him in the face. Wow.
Wow. Yeah, a decent Raw here, I would say.
Yes.
Okay, moving on to August in sports. On August 1st, Rafael Palmeiro of the Baltimore Orioles was suspended 10 days for violating MLB's steroid policy. This after categorically denying in front of Congress that he'd ever done steroids.
Yeah.
Literally weeks after he hit 500.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not ideal.
It's not. It's really not ideal. Also, speaking of things that are not ideal, Barry Bonds said that he's going to miss the rest of the 2005 season due to injuries he suffered in spring training in an interview posted on MLB.com.
Yeah.
So,
and he missed all of 2006, if I remember correctly, too. So now, if not all of it, then most of it.
Yeah. Indeed. Also, injury news to report on August 2nd, Twins outfielder Torii Hunter was declared out for the rest of the 2005 season after suffering an injury at Fenway Park back on July 31st, where he tore tendons and broke his ankle.
Yeah,
I remember that.
That was a ugly. Big one. Yeah, that was a big one. Torii was incredible. So, by the way, sorry about Bonds. Bonds did play 2006. I was
okay.
Very, very much tweaking. He hit 714 in 2006. I was
Yes. Let's see. In addition to that, Shaq signed a 5-year, $100 million extension with the Miami Heat.
Expensive, but worth it.
Very much so.
Was that like a max back then, I guess?
Pretty much, yeah. Making 20 mil a year was...
That's crazy how much that's gone up.
And Shaq was still fucking dominant, so...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, it's 2005 that I was thinking of the Bonds didn't play. He only played 14 games in 05.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and on August 3rd, there was a massive 5-team trade in the NBA. The Miami Heat acquired
the Knicks were definitely a part of this, weren't they?
It was the Heat, the Grizzlies, the Jazz, the Celtics, and the Hornets.
Oh, okay.
It was the most players involved in a single trade ever. The Heat acquired Antoine Walker, Jason Williams, James Posey, and Andre Emmett, plus the rights to Roberto Duenas from New Orleans.
I mean, Williams and Posey are key parts.
They really get
very much so. Yeah.
All three of them: Walker, Posey, and White Chocolate.
And,
Yep.
The Grizzlies acquired Eddie Jones and Raul Lopez. The Utah Jazz reacquired Greg Ostertag from Memphis.
Wow.
The Celtics acquired Curtis Borchardt and Kintel Woods, the rights to Albert Mireles, and a pair of second-round picks in cash, all from Miami. Mm-hmm. And the Hornets acquired Rasual Butler and Kirk Snyder.
Yeah, I remember when that trade went down, it was so massive. Obviously, Antoine Walker being from Chicago, followed his career a lot. And him going to Miami, I felt was a big get for Miami because it gave them somebody on the wings that they could turn to, could knock down a shot, could play defense. But you talk about all three of those guys. I'm trying to find the playoff stats in particular. Yeah, he started every game in that postseason, Antoine Walker, for Miami, and averaged 13. Jason Williams was starting point guard. It was him and Gary Payton. Gary Payton was your D guy off the bench, while Jason Williams was your floor general, setting the table, you know, getting the ball to Wade, and obviously Wade doing his thing, and then Posey. Because he was on the Celtics in that series in 2009 with the Bulls, like, I could not fucking stand James Posey. But he on those Celtics teams and this Heat team in particular was so vital because he's a fucking pest defensively. So it's crazy how they got all three of those guys and they were all core contributors to that 05-06 title team in that one trade.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Baltimore Orioles.
I also think I had an Andre Emmer trading card, if I remember. Yep. Wasn't he a Grizzly at one point?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe that is where they got him. Card. Yep, all three for Lupus. All right. So on August 4th, the Orioles fired Lee Mazzilli. Mazzilli was hired back for the 2004 season. They had some high expectations after they made moves for Miguel Tejada and Javi Lopez, among a few others. But
wasn't Lee Mazzilli the Braves pitching coach?
I believe so.
Yeah, he coached for the Yankees for a while, and then
he was just the Yankees.
He was just with the Yankees. Yeah, there we go.
I'm blanking on who I thought was. That was maybe a later time, but yeah, Mazzilli was bad. The Tejada was 2004, right? They signed Tejada, and I think they signed one other guy.
Yeah, they got Javi Lopez.
Yeah,
that's right.
And I remember that because they started the 2004 season. Was Sunday Night Baseball between the Orioles and the Red Sox.
Yeah, okay, sure. Yep. Palmeiro was still on Baltimore at this time? He wasn't back in Texas?
I think he was with Texas, but I don't
know. No, he's still in Baltimore.
Okay, still with Baltimore. Yeah, there you go.
That's right, because Sammy was on the team. Right, yeah. But yeah, no. I remember, Brian Roberts, I think, was an all-star around this time. He's also 05. That's right. And he's kind of coming into his own before the, hey, are the Cubs going to trade for Brian Roberts every fucking year? I actually think this was coming off of Eric Bedard's one good year, wasn't it?
Yes.
Because wasn't Bedard's good year like 2004? And then 05 was kind of like, So,
yep.
Yeah. Poor Orioles. Poor Orioles.
And also on August 4th, the Flyers traded Jeremy Roenick to the Kings for quote-unquote future considerations. This was kind of awkward, though, because the day before, the Flyers got Peter Forsberg from the Avalanche, and they had to trade somebody because they were over the salary cap limit.
Mm-hmm.
So they traded Roenick to L.A.
Well, the thing is fuck Jeremy Roenick.
Yes, I agree.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I've never met Peter Forsberg. I'm pretty sure he's a good guy. I'm pretty sure he's a better guy than Jeremy Roenick.
Indeed.
But Roenick did give us a really good Michael Jordan story, and I'm thankful for him for that.
That's true.
Did you guys see what Jordan was talking about Luke Longley?
Yeah.
I guess Luke Longley has his own, documentary. It's on, Peacock or Paramount, one of the two. And Mike was like, yeah, he had 13 points or whatever And then the game in the finals against Utah, I'm like, yeah, that's how you fucking play. And the game finished, we lost by 15. We had 13 points. I could feel the anger in Mike's body. yes.
All right. On August 5th, two pieces of news that would be interesting, given what would happen in years that would pass. The NCAA announced a ban on American Indian mascots in all NCAA playoff tournaments as of 2008.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, people were real upset that Illinois couldn't have their in-person Indian mascot anymore. Yes. People are still very upset about that.
That does not surprise me.
Cleveland are still mad that they can't call their team the racial slurs.
That's true.
Exactly.
It's wild that they actually let Cena play that up a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. And also, League Commissioner David Stern announced that the 2007 All-Star Game would be held in Las Vegas, making it the first city without a franchise to host this event.
Mm-hmm. Big deal.
Big deal.
Somebody dropped an article a couple of days ago, and I feel so bad that I'm forgetting. Oh, I think it was Deshaun Reed from The Athletic, who covers the Raiders, and he dropped an article on Summer League, and how that really kind of spurred the pro leagues finally coming to Las Vegas after years of just believing it's a cesspool of filth and gambling and sex and everything that you don't want your players getting into. Summer League played a big role in kind of spurring that. So the All-Star Game was kind of like the next step in we're finally getting teams in Vegas, and now we got three if you count the Aces. That was a big, and I've heard so many fucking wild stories of the 07 All-Star Game. Like, Anthony Anderson tells stories of the 2007 All-Star Game that are fucking hilarious. If you know people that have gone to that or like were in Vegas around that time, there's always a story.
So. Oh, yeah.
All right. And of course, the one last tidbit is that the Falcons beat the Colts on August 6th in the first NFL preseason game, which was in the American Bowl out in Tokyo. I stayed up and watched the start.
Did you guys bet on the Hall of Fame game?
No,
I did not.
It's good to know that you guys aren't deviants.
I had only been doing baseball. I caught fire this whole week, but I had a bad night last night. I'm like, you know what? I'm not doing this again until
is fucking hard to get a handle on.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Without a doubt. I was surprised that I did as well as I did. I'd only lost like 2 bets out of like 13 the whole week.
I was ready to rip the hell out of Sox fans, not because they were going to beat the Cubs, was because they were going to blow fucking 2-run leads, and I took the Sox on the run line.
Oh,
can't
yeah.
Be giving up 6 runs to that offense. Jesus.
Oh, man. All right. For SmackDown, August 4th, 2005, from Bridgeport, Connecticut, Christian's in the ring for the first edition of The Peep Show. Rey Mysterio is his guest. Christian says, Eddie Guerrero dropped a bomb on all of us last week. Eddie's also here and be on the screen to finish his story. Rey tells Eddie to shut up, and Eddie says Rey's being rude and he'll finish his story later tonight. And Christian attacks Rey from behind, hits him with an I'm prettier. Jillian Hall cuts a promo backstage, telling people to give her a fair chance, despite how, you know, her face looks. And again, just, it's not, you don't need to do that. Like, if people genuinely struggle with things and you're making a mockery of it. And then we kick off with Eminem against Booker T and Chris Benoit.
This was fantastic.
Yeah,
this is one of my favorite TV matches of the whole year.
A very fun match.
It's a really great display, and they're obviously working with who they're working with, but it's very easy to see why they were so behind Eminem from the jump. They're very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Booker goes for the scissors kick late in the match, and Melina grabs his leg, and Charmel goes after Melina, but Jillian spears Charmel, and Joy Mercury rolls up Booker and grabs the ropes, and they get the win. So, you know, kind of keeps Eminem fresh and heated up, even though they lost their tag titles.
And this will eventually put this on the precipice of a feud between Booker and Benoit that takes up much of the fall and winter.
Yeah. Christian tells Teddy Long he should be in the main event tonight, and Teddy Long agrees and says that he can face Rey Mysterio. So,
okay,
yeah,
cool.
Josh Matthews with Randy Orton. Randy says he didn't jump the Undertaker last week, he just did what Undertaker did to him. Tonight, he'll make his intentions perfectly clear. JBL and Batista signed their contract for their SummerSlam match. Batista says JBL can pick whatever stipulation he wants, since the Great American Bash match ended how it did. JBL picks no holds barred. Animal convinced Heidenreich to paint his face like Hawk now. Then they go and squash some jobbers again. So, you know. Doing what they can with those two, I suppose.
Doing what they can with those two, indeed. Randy Orton's in the ring. He said that WrestleMania 21 was supposed to be his time, and he was supposed to beat The Undertaker, but fate intervened, and it didn't happen. But now he's back, and now he can get what he deserves. He despises The Undertaker, and his legacy will live long after he's gone. Randy calls The Undertaker out, and he appears on screen, And Undertaker tells Randy that at SummerSlam, he's going to rest in peace. So we have a WrestleMania rematch on the horizon between Orton and Taker. They, of course, had a thriller and the first, like, real close call of the streak ending back in April. So intrigued to see what they have for round two. Eddie Guerrero was in the back, and a limo pulled up, and a random woman got out, and Eddie brought her inside for chapter two of his story.
Yes.
And we move to Rey Mysterio versus Christian, our main event. Rey went right after Christian to take his frustrations out. And then Eddie and the woman came out to watch the match from the stage. Unsurprisingly, with a great TV worker like Christian and with Rey Mysterio in 2005, this match was pretty good. A real fun watch. And Christian went for the unprettier, but Rey countered it into a 619 for the victory.
Yes. And then Rey tells Eddie to come to the ring. Eddie says he's fine where he's at. His friend Anna will help finish telling his story tonight. Eddie says that either Rey can tell chapter two or Eddie will. Next week, Rey has to bring Dominic because the courts have found that legally and biologically, Eddie is Dominic's father, so he has to turn him over to Eddie next week. But if Rey can convince Eddie not to do it, maybe he won't. Rey says that, you know, him and his wife have raised Dominic for 8 years, and Rey taught him how to ride a bike and, you know, cared for him and took him to the hospital and all that. Rey says he was going to tell him, but not till he was old enough to understand. And Rey kind of begs Eddie to stop and not hurt him or his family anymore. Eddie's not falling for it. And, you know, his attorney said that Rey would try to do this. If Eddie lied to his son all his life, why would anyone trust him? Eddie says next week will be chapter three where Dominic comes home. So, yeah, really heating up here.
Yep. Very much so.
Good couple weeks across the board. Who you guys have? Let's just double up on the King of the Ring. I knew it was really king of these last 2 weeks.
I mean, I would go with Michaels just because he had two just really awesome segments that I enjoyed a whole lot.
I think there's candidates. Because you got Michaels. For like
got Eminem.
Got Eminem for like Orton coming back, targeting Taker. You could throw in Bischoff and Jericho. You can kind of throw in Carlito as well because he did pick up a victory against the champ. So there's options.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, maybe you could go with Orton. You know, he did come back and make a statement, kind of set up his program for the rest of the year. Yeah, I go with Orton.
That works.
Yeah, we'll take Orton. Anything else before we end this week's show?
Nope.
Alrighty, we'll be back talking next week. We'll talk more about SummerSlam. Look forward to that. Rampage debuts this upcoming Friday, am I right?
Yeah, the 13th, yes.
First episode of Rampage in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Ooh, they're doing the first show in Pittsburgh. I wonder who might show up. It's Eugene. I am at Cameron Santo. Rob's at Robin031. Chris is at Chris M. Novak. Follow us on Twitter at BarberStairNet, same as Instagram, Facebook.com/BarberStairDigital. Sign up for the Patreon, Patreon.com/BarberStairNetwork. $10 gets you our all access tier, where you get exclusive episodes, including the WWE Top 25, which we are about to record right now. And you'll also get exclusive episodes of Summer Sessions, where I can't use a problematic button and, you know, yeah, things happen. Rate and review us, give us 5 stars, leave us a comment, help us drive us up the algorithms. We really do appreciate it when you do it. We're 2 weeks away from SummerSlam, like I said. We'll talk more about SummerSlam. If you're going, give us a word. It's Vegas, so I'll be shitty all that. I got Friday off, so like I'll be shitty that entire day. I can't wait. I really can't wait. All right, this has been Ruthless Aggression. Take it easy, kiddos. We'll see you next week.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.